So years ago, when I was starting to poke around church leadership in my home Unitarian Universalist congregation, we were talking about inviting a speaker, and I think it was an author, but I can't even, it's one of those stories where I remember the end and not what got us to the question. And so we're talking about inviting this person, and I do remember this more experienced leader in the congregation asking, but why do that here? If we had that speaker here, how would it be different than if that same program were offered at the local library? It's a good question to ask. What's so special here? So the answer I offered 20 years later, after seminary and 5 years into parish ministry, is we try to go deeper. We press and try to find connection with the soul. I think religious community does call us to ask different questions, whether we're talking about gun violence or racism or forgiveness or hope. Here, we start by asking, what are the values at stake? Which is a question that could happen in a good library or a good academic class. It's not that values aren't discussed other places. But I think next, we try and put that experience through the lens of the spiritual, which in a Unitarian Universalist translation might be, where does the power of love fit in? And broadly, this is my last service of being with you for almost a year. It takes between that September and May timeframe. And broadly, I am charged to be your spiritual leader. Again, translating, I see my role is to help individuals and the congregation as a whole make time and space for the power of love. Sometimes it's at a cottage meeting, sometimes it's during a sermon. There's lots of different ways that happens, but there's questions that come out of that obligation. Because I think congregations, in whatever tradition it is, what we produce is relationships. It may take a few orders of service and services to get there, but we are looking to ask some big questions. And I think the question as a congregation you ask one another is, are we living with one another in good faith? Are we growing in trust of one another and of ourselves? Are we building relationships in the community? So I try to be a grounded presence, and I try to be part of that mirror, part of that motivation, part of that energy around bringing the power of love forward. So in a year, I can look out in the congregation right now, something I couldn't say in September. I know virtually all of your names. I know stories. I know particularly those who come more often a little better. And part of my role as minister is to get to know you individually and through your stories and questions to try to figure out what we're going to talk about week to week, what kind of programs make sense. But I've realized that I make a really big assumption when I come here. I think it's an assumption I'm trying to wish into being. And that comes when I assume that everybody here comes wanting to change. That every week you come, you want to change or to be changed, however you want to look at that verb. I remember when my kids were little, they had the Transformer toys. And some of them, they would start as a truck or a boat. And if you twisted them just the right way, they would sort of look, for those who haven't seen them, so like a Lego-ish kind of look. But if you were smart enough and twisted just the front of the boat a certain way and made it vertical, you had a robot. Often a robot that the head would spin or lights would come on, and it was a transformed thing. It in my generation, I might have thought of Clark Kent turning into Superman or Adam West to Batman. There was a sense that transformation can happen. And so do I think that everybody here has a secret life, is a hero, is ready for that transformation? Sort of. But more precisely, I think we're all a little bit timid sometime about bringing our full selves forward. We hide a bit. We have something to uncover. And what we do, the way it manifests, is we label ourselves by our jobs, by our education, by our travel, by our latest task completed, the accomplishments. Not bad things, but what's behind those layers? Where's that next place that you can imagine offering connection? Where's your unsureness that you come forward, not quite sure what way you might change if you just share that, your tender spots? Where's the next creative offering? For those who were here a couple weeks ago, yes, we're all creative. Where's that place in each of us? So maybe it's not so much that I assume everyone wants to change or even to be boldly transformed, but most weeks what I hope is that there is an openness to possibly being changed, a welcoming chance for this to happen. And at the individual level, sometimes that means loosening some tough stuff, loosening how we define ourselves, loosening the expectations of society. The intentional goal of being together each week, I hope, is that we walk out changed. Reverend Scott Taylor, in one of his Soul Matters packets, he cautions of times when we think about such openness as being heroes. He says this: watch out for the heroic talk about striving and perfecting, struggle and control. Much of the time, transformation is much subtler art. It's about stillness, listening, waiting to be led, not fighting with yourself and others to make sure you are in the lead. More often than not, transformation, he says, is about breathing rather than becoming better, about patience, not perfection, about attention, not improvement, and about depth, not dominance. So that's my bold assumption, that we come here individually ready to be changed, and we gain a little bit of confidence, some weeks needing more gentleness with ourselves, sometimes needing a little kick. I'm also not so bold to assume that the change you find is in the sermon. Sometimes it's in the rituals that carry you through in the morning, the music, the reading, the story and reflection, joys and sorrows and coffee hour. And there's that possibility of openness that comes when you're touched, when your evolving story comes, and maybe you see the world through Harry Potter's eyes, remembering one of my early services here. So what helps you prepare and come ready for this transformation? It's that code to myself to remember part of my job is to create those openings. So at the individual level, going deeper is going to mean something for each one of us. It's usually not about analyzing more and fixing more and creating more and doing more. It's often about pausing and being ready for that unexpected that Annie talked about. Some of us might think of that in different terms of the beginner's mind, that openness to seeing differently. So that's the individual part, but I don't think that's exactly why you asked me to be your minister. At a recent installation, when a congregation calls a minister, which is sort of a permanent way that you get ministry, I heard another minister giving one of the talks, and she said to be cautious about thinking your relationship, your job as a minister, was just to be in marriage with the congregation. She reminded this minister who was being charged, for folks who know Paint Branch, they were installing their called minister. She was saying, your job as minister is to help the congregation collectively live into its mission. And I'm not as focused on what the language or the exact words of the mission are, but the mission is something about spreading love, bringing love, going out and doing the work and doing it collectively. So there are a couple big reasons. I think this is something that's important to hear this morning. Because I think collective growth and change is how you build a community that is going to matter in this world. The collective change came to mind as I watched the royal wedding yesterday. And I am a watcher. I have been to a Chuck and Di party in 1981. I have gotten up at 4 a.m. to watch royal funerals. I went to a Kate and William party at 5 a.m. one morning. So I'm not that surprised that I watched this yesterday. And much of the tradition, from the horses and carriage and the traditional words of the Anglican liturgy as the couple took their vows, was extremely traditional. The honoring of the queen, these talk about how the rituals would proceed. And yet, here is the New York Times write-up describing what happened yesterday. A 1,000-year-old English castle echoed with the exhortations of an African-American bishop in a gospel choir. Miss Markle, who has long identified herself as a feminist, entered St. George's Chapel alone rather than being given away by her father or another man. The article goes on, and Prince Harry, who has long called on the British monarchy to draw closer to the daily life of its people, what he did was amazing, was to marry Miss Markle. An American actress who was 3 years his senior, biracial, and divorced. Their choices at the wedding, many of them heavily influenced by Black culture, make clear they plan to project a more inclusive monarchy. So when I think of collective voice, a monarchy is a collective voice, and it has symbols and actions that matter. I believe deeply that tradition and ritual and all these graduations that are celebrated matter a lot. And it is broader than a 30-something-year-old couple who started a life together as married people this morning. Individually, we all know we have the spots on our identity, the places where a little bit of patience or spiritual growth would be good. But how about the collective transformation of this congregation? In an early sermon, I asked you, when was the first time that you remember using we, the word we, and you were speaking of this congregation? I ask it again. Did you have a sense of we over the course of the last year? And did it feel important? This year, this past year, for most of you, it was probably not a first time you could say this, but for me it was. I had this sense of we on Christmas Eve, which you really proudly celebrate on December 23rd. There's a sense of pride on having figured out there was a gap December 23rd, and when you tell me that story, and when folks shared up, and this place was crawling with kids, I sensed we. I was drawn to Lynn Dollinger's passion when she spoke after Parkland and said, we need to do something, and within 2 weeks she had a speaker here. We were there, and we, not me personally, we're in downtown Chestertown figuring out what it looks like to have a shared voice. So when I speak each week, I know individual connection matters, but I'm also hoping there's a greater sense of we, because I also think there's we in the work of hospitality that happens every week. It's partly the coffee, good job, and I like the fact most congregations don't have their coffee ready before the minister gets here. You guys do? But there was a we as I watched your pledge campaign come together. The way the budget was presented, the beautiful tree that Diane had in the lobby. There have been many senses of we where I've gotten a little peek of what's behind your identity. behind the board that Philip created, where he and the team said, this is about what we look like if you put it on paper. What's behind that? Where is the love and the care that has grown this community over the years? My colleague at that installation reminded me that as a minister, my focus is the collective whole. It's in part about the individuals, but about the mission. So if you want to measure this year, how did it go? If you're living into your mission, if you have a greater sense of we probably did okay together. So my hope for this congregation is that in a different way, shared goals continue to emerge. The cottage meetings has brought some of that forward. But what are your shared goals that you all know that are out on the board that every single person here goes, wow, we did that. Part of that comes when you go to these next steps, you've done an amazing job, and can say there's a couple things next year that would be really exciting if they happened, and we are going to do it. Because the skills of community right here make you a spiritual community. UUCR is a covenantal community. This means that members live into their promises to one another. Individuals are willing to share and make trade-offs for the good of the whole, to be accountable. UUCR is a generous community, and that is a spiritual place. It means that you trust in a sense of abundance, a sense that there will be enough, rather than living out of scarcity. And in that bounty, in that beauty and grace, there is a trust in unearned gifts and the power of love if one just lets it come forward. And I do believe, and this is where I see the growing edge and I'm excited about, is UUCR is a community of vision. It's partly the statements, but it's also about naming freedom and liberation for others. Experiences that are not shared by all. It might be some version of the Golden Rule or the UU principles and beloved community. You can mix all that together, but are you collectively trying to find out where the power of love fits in? So going deeper is a start. The places of pause, the places of intentional reflection, the places of holding yourself gently, tenderly, and letting a few uncovered spots come in. But so if it's a standard that you'd like me to hold as your spiritual leader, it's grounded in the question, have I helped UUCR grow in its sense of we this year? Have I helped listen for needs in the community and helped us respond together? In a moment, you're going to go through and have your flower communion service. And I invite you to sense this ritual as a ritual of the whole, a manifestation of a people connecting in depth, and a congregation making time and space for the power of love. May it be so. Blessings, and I am around all summer, just not as much on Sundays, but I am going to be in Chestertown, and I love to meet with folks individually and find out what is at the core for you and how is this community making a difference in your life. So Annie, you have the flower community, right?